Wow. You know, music just opens your heart like no talk can, right? Oh my gosh, thank you, James. And our delightful Higher Vision Choir. We will miss you for the next 2 months. Get rest. We want you back in September. Thank you so much. Well, we made it to the end of June, yay. Phew, this month we talked about You Hold the Key. That was June's theme, You Hold the Key. So we started the journey in the first week of June with the keys to the kingdom. And then Reverend Jean talked the second week about the keys to compassion, right? Last week we moved from talking about the keys to talking about the door. And we talked about the door of everything, and that was when I couldn't stop talking. Remember that one? John does. So anyway, so today we finish up the You Hold the Key theme with Your Good Awaits. Your good awaits, and your good does await, but it waits on your welcome. It waits on our welcome. So we are the ones that have to make the move. See, that's the way it works. You know, remember, we talked about the door not being locked. The door is not locked. We don't really need the keys, right? That's a story we tell ourselves. But we have to accept the gift. We have to accept the gift for the gift to be given. In Malachi 3:10, it says, "Bring all the tithes into the storehouse that there may be meat in my house. And prove me now, said the Lord, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that there shall not be room enough to receive it." That's a lot of good. That is a lot of good that we are told is already ours. That is an outpicturing of the universe saying yes all the time, saying yes to us. And we have to say yes back. We are the ones that have to accept the gift, not, you know, well, depending upon whatever, whatever, right, in my life. Not, yeah, but if only, right? How many times we do that, we limit ourselves. Not, you know, oh, yeah, but first I need to, right, get enough education or get enough this or get enough that. You know, first I need to whatever, whatever, whatever. It's about just saying yes. It's about accepting our good, saying yes, staring the facts right in the face and knowing a higher truth. We have to. We are in the world, but not of it, right? So we have to stare the facts right in the face, but know a greater truth exists. We cannot limit truth. We can't limit truth. We cannot say, oh, I am the one and only exception to God's infinite rule of abundance. It just doesn't work that way. We have to accept our good. Ernest Holmes said it this way in This Thing Called Life. He said, when you pray, or affirm your good, close the door of your consciousness to everything that denies good and state your desires, not as a supplication, but as an affirmation of acceptance. Affirmative prayer is the recognition that our good is already at hand, an affirmation that we are already experiencing that good. It's already all here. The gift has already been given. Accept the good. It's just as easy to accept the good as it is to accept the bad. It doesn't take any more energy to accept your good than to accept your bad. You know, I was in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and I was in a store. It's like really cute. I was in this store, and I mentioned to the sales clerk, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it is such a beautiful day out there. She said, yeah, but it's not going to last. Okay. People cling to their dark side. They cling to their dark side. Some people don't want too much positive, you know? They don't want to hope for too much, maybe. They don't want to be disappointed, maybe, right? And then when I said, well, but it can all work out great, they said, no, you got to be realistic. Like, what that? What is that, right? You have to, like somehow being positive is not being realistic, but being negative is being realistic. Okay, so I don't get that, you know. Being positive or being negative, I mean, they're just two sides of one coin. Neither one is more or less realistic, right? Realism is not all it's cracked up to be, let me tell you. But neither one is more realistic than the other. It's just a matter of where we place our intention. You know, this is that whole glass half full, half empty conversation. I mean, that's really what this is. But we are here in Centers for Spiritual Living. We are religious scientists, so we know the glass is neither half full or half empty. We just know we have unlimited refills. That's what we have, you know? But people have a tendency to look at the dark side. And we all have one. We all have the shadow nature. We all have that dark side within ourselves. And you know, it's kind of what we hate most about ourselves, is our dark side, that fear of failure, or that extreme shyness we have, or our sexual compulsions, or our alcohol addiction, or our perfectionism, or whatever it is. Maybe it's a drug, or it's a gambling addiction. Maybe it's an aggressive way we have of dealing with our families, or, you know, closest family members or friends. There's some dark side in all of us. And not only is it what we dislike in ourselves, but it's what we hate in others, right? And we always get to see that best. You know, those things that other people do. Every time somebody makes you frustrated like that, you know, every time somebody, some person touches that in you and lights you up, you know that's what's in you that you're not liking. You know, it's because that person touched a very delicate part of your dark nature. I remember we have this prayer in the Financial Freedom class. We call it a releasing prayer, and we practice it all the time in that class, and I love it. And it's about releasing what no longer serves us. And so it could be that dark side, that thing that you do, you know, that rises up in you, that someone can push your button, and you know that button's been there for years. They didn't install it, they just pushed it. So we have this prayer that sort of, I release the false belief in whatever. And then with your other arm, you say, I release the need too. And that need, that's the thing that we do in reaction to when our button is pushed, you know, when that false belief comes up. Whatever it is, we do to press that feeling down, whether that's, you know, the compulsive shopping or the drinking or the overeating or whatever it is. So it winds up being, I am grateful God is the, you know, whatever truth that I am. So that's our practice. When we start feeling that the undercurrent of those false beliefs rising up in us, those times when we are tempted to act out and to be that, you know, unskilled behavior that we can do so well. Brené Brown wrote a book called Rising Strong. And she said this, she said, the most dangerous stories we make up are the narratives that diminish our inherent worthiness. We must reclaim the truth about our lovability, our divinity, and our creativity. And that's really what your good awaits on the other side of that work. You know, that idea that we are altogether irresistibly lovable. Each and every one of us, no exceptions. So someone betrayed us. Or a lover left us, or a parent beat us, or, you know, somebody lied to you about your lovability, you know, you're not good enough, you'll never amount to anything, you were born wrong, whatever, right? They're stories that were told to us in our childhood. But just because someone chose not to love us, or was not available to love us, or unable to love us, does not mean that we are unlovable. Yeah, baby. Yes, does not mean we are unlovable. Everybody is lovable. We were born lovable. We are love. God is love. We are that. It is the nature of spirit to love unconditionally. We are that. We are loved and we are lovable. And just like we're lovable, we're divine. We are divine. That seed of perfection that is nestled within us, that spirit put there itself before you were even born, that seed of perfection is nestled within you. And we are born as the outpicturing of a thought that spirit is having. We are inherently divine. No one can judge our divinity. And you know, shaming occurs in religions. No secret there, right? And And Brené Brown goes on to say that no one religion over another one rises to the top. In all of the research that she did, she said no one religion rises to the top of another when it comes to shaming. They kind of equally, you know, there are good people, there are, you know, there is an us and them kind of mentality that happens around religion sometimes, or religious environments. And we need to stop letting that define us. We need to stop letting that be the narrative that runs around in our heads. Because just like we were all born lovable, we were all born divine. Across the boards. We can't let others' beliefs define us. And then it comes to creativity. We have to nurture the stories that we tell about ourselves when it comes to our creativity. You know, when we were 5 years old, we could all draw. Everybody can draw when you're 5 years old. You've seen those little kids. Oh my gosh. Everybody is an artist at 5 years old. And you know what happens between 5 and 9? Ask a 9-year-old, can they draw? They can't draw. I can't draw people. I can't draw horses. I can't draw whatever it is. Because between 5 and 9, someone told them, right? Someone looked at their painting and said, what is that? Is it an octopus? No, it's a horse. That doesn't look like a horse. And then they don't paint anymore, right? Just because someone failed to see the value of our creations does not mean we lack creativity. It means they lack imagination. Right? Am I right? We have to nurture and stay conscious of these narratives that we're telling ourselves about our lovability, about our divinity, about our creativity. Because as long as we're telling those stories, we have to live under the limitation of them. Do you see where that goes? We wind up co-creating the very circumstances of our lives through the narratives we talk about. We tell other people about who and what we are. Then we have to live under the limitation of those. We have to be very aware and very conscious of the stories we tell about ourselves to other people, because they'll believe it too. You know, we don't want to tell those stories anymore. We don't want to tell stories about the limitation of our love or the limitation of our divinity. We certainly don't want to tell any more stories about the limitation of our creativity, because other people will believe it. And you know what they say about your stories, right? What are the 3 things that stink after 3 days? Fish, uninvited guests, and your story. You know, got to get rid of them. We have to up-level. Ernest Holmes, on a Holmes reader on Practical Wisdom, said this: life is an eternal givingness, the offering of the cosmic self to the joy of its own fulfillment. That's what we're here to do, the joy of its own fulfillment. We are spirit having a good time in a form, in a body. And he goes on to say, you and I are part of this joy, and we find fulfillment only as this joy passes through us to others. That's why we're here. Everything moves in circles, he said. We short-circuit our own good when we refuse to pass it on. So we have to tell the greatest story of our lives. We have to tell the greatest story of our lives. I remember Jacob Glass one Saturday morning, he said, there was a story about a guy who, you know, he went cross country in a car, drove from Los Angeles to New York in a car. He said they left out the part that he was tied up in the trunk. I was like, oh my God. But you have to tell the best story you can, you know? We have to have the highest thought about our good. We have to have the best narrative for our lives. That's the story we want to tell people. That's the story we want to live from. We have to take the limitation off of the story. How many times can you tell that same old story about your parents, or about your boss, or about your job, or about the economy, or about politics, or about your relatives? I mean, it's like, how many times do you want to tell that same old boring story? Haven't you had it with that? Really, honest to God. So here's how we get out of our own story. We serve others. Perfect way. Perfect way. In the beginning, if you've got nothing else, you serve someone else. If you're all caught up in your head, you serve someone else. If you're sitting thinking about how your life stinks, you serve someone else. We feel better. We feel better when we serve. When we get out of our own heads and we stop obsessing over our own life, over the trivialities of our own conditions, when we stop obsessing over our own situation and serve someone else, it makes us feel better. Just makes us feel better. And so it lifts our story. What do? I serve food to the homeless. What do? I serve meals. Is Reverend Sam here? Oh, there you are. I serve meals at Ronald McDonald House, right? Things like that. It makes us feel better. We're serving. We're of service. Someone's life is a little better because we were on the planet. Makes us feel better. Another way we improve our story, another way we improve the narrative of our story is accepting things that we can't change. There are certain things we can't change. I will never, ever, ever be an NBA star. I'm too old. I'm too short. And most of all, because I don't like basketball. It's not a sport, it's a game, it's a dance. Don't let them kid you. Anyway, really, I'm serious, okay? So, accepting what is, it's like you know that saying, what you resist persists? Right? What you resist persists. What you accept, you can transform. What we accept, we can transform. Then we're free to move forward. And we can stop wishing it otherwise. We don't have to wish things otherwise. And here's the thing, acceptance is not resignation. Okay? Acceptance is not resignation. Accepting and letting go of what we cannot change and what has already happened, and acknowledging there are certain things we have no control over, allows us to focus on the things we can control and we can change. That's empowering. Letting go of the stuff we can't change, and it just frees up our energy to change those things we can. So it's another way to uplevel your story, to improve your narrative, so you're not at the effect of the world, but you are co-creating. The third way we can improve things is by self-love. Self-love. You know, self-love, self-compassion, self-forgiveness, which is really all forgiveness. You know, all forgiveness is self-forgiveness because we're choosing to no longer suffer from someone else's behavior of the past. So all forgiveness is really self-forgiveness. Being kind to the self. You know, we exhibit skilled behavior and unskilled behavior kind of on a regular basis, don't we? Haven't there been times where you look back at a response you had or a reaction you had and you think, well, I could have done that better, right? Or am I the only one? Come on, am I the only one? There are times when we look at our lives and go, oh God, you know, I could have done a better job there. But we let it go. Learn from it. Don't do the same stupid thing again. You can learn from it, but we have to let it go. And then something different occurs next time. We're a little more conscious, right? And then when that same button gets pushed again, we take a breath, we take a time out, we regroup, and we respond rather than react. We do something different. But we let it go. Let it go. Let the skilled behavior go. Let the unskilled behavior go. It's just who we were in that moment. It doesn't define a lifetime, it defines a moment. So how else do we raise the level of our narrative? Oh, we can tell our inner critic to shut up. You know, really, honest to God, we all have one, right? The little, you know, you're doing this, I want you to do this. Just tell the inner critic to silence. You know, it used to be when you were little, maybe it was the voice of your parent, or maybe it was your grandparent, or maybe it was a teacher. It was somebody who was important to you. But they don't have any business being in your head. You're an adult. You should be the only one in there now. You know, it's another thing Jacob Glass said. I remember he said, you know, it's like one of those old horror movies, you know, where they're like, oh my God, the phone call, it's coming from inside the house. Yeah, it is, you know, yeah, it is. It's about silencing the inner critic. You're the only one in there now. It's up to us. It's up to us. Maybe it was a parent. Maybe it was a teacher. Maybe it was a grandfather or something when you were a child. But there's nobody in there now. It's just you. It's just us. So we have to silence that inner critic. Let it be. Just let it be. There's nobody else in there. And one of the ways we can do this is to make good use of affirmations. You know, I know affirmation sometimes has a bad rap. You know, it's like the religious science in hell, you know, they just keep saying, I'm not here and it's not hot. I'm not here and it's not hot. I'm not here and it's not hot. But really, affirmations do have a value and they do have a use and they start the ball rolling. Even if we can't see the good right then and there, to know good exists. To know good exists and to make good use of those affirmations. So when that critical voice does speak up, a good affirmation of truth is the way to go. A good affirmation of truth, it silences that inner critic. Keeping positive may mean silencing the negative. It has to. It has to. You know, because we do look for faults instead of strengths, don't we? I think it comes from the reptilian brain. You know, it is down there, right? It's still in there. Our reptilian brain is still there. You know, we've got these beautiful cerebellums and cerebral cortexes, but down at the base, we're still that little reptilian brain. Eat, sleep, reproduce. That's all we know. And that reptilian brain is the thing that keeps looking for the danger. We keep looking for the danger. So, of course, it's going to see limitations. It's going to see negatives. That's what it was trained to do. And so we have to silence that, you know. We have to, instead of look for the faults, look for the strengths in ourselves. Look for the strengths, you know, and silence that reptilian brain that is always on the lookout for the weakness in our armor. That's what it's there for. That's its job, really. So it's about silencing that. Good, powerful affirmations can overcome that. And we start to retrain our brains, and we start to create new neural pathways that lead to positive instead of negative. You know, like the Ernest Holmes mantra, that beautiful song that the choir sang for us, there's only one life, that life is God's life, that life is perfect, that life is my life now. If that's the only thing you can think of to say, say that. Say that. Make that your daily practice. There is only one life. This life is God's life. This life is perfect. This life is my life now. If you can't remember anything else, in those times of trial, in those times when the inner critic is yakking away, you say that. You say that. Remember, everything that we desire is on the other side of that door. That door to everything. Everything we desire is on the other side of our fear. Remember how we push through? We opened the door, we walked through. I mean, remember that first time or second time or the most meaningful time you did that, when you pushed through and it was like, oh my God, you're on the other side and you felt freer and lighter and happier than you've ever felt before? That's because everything we desire is on the other side of our fear. It's on the other side of the story we tell about our limitations, about our faults, about our negativity, about all the things that we can't do. Everything we desire, the whole entire life of God, that limitless expression of a self-actualized being, it's all on the other side of that door. We have to take the step. We have to summon up the courage, or whatever it is, to live that life. Our greater story is on the other side of that door. We walk through that door. That is where our good awaits. We walk through it. Remember, it's not locked. We have the key anyway, even if it was, but it isn't. We push it open. We walk through that door because that's where our good awaits. We hold the key. We have everything we need to live our greatest life ever. It is up to us to say yes.